The opinions and views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of this panel broadcasting radio station. Welcome to Building the Future, a paid presentation of the Orange County IDA, Industrial Development Agency.
Welcome, everyone. This is Bill Fioravanti, CEO of the Orange County Industrial Development Agency, here with another episode of Building the Future, our podcast that we've started the last several months, here talking with local leaders about issues impacting the future of economic development, of smart growth in our areas, et cetera, et cetera. Really happy to have our guest today, Adam Bosch, who is, are you president and CEO, Adam? Are you just CEO?
That's what they say, president and CEO.
That's everyone's, you can't just be one or the other.
President
and CEO, apparently, of Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, thanks for having me.
We've known each other a while now. I remember your days going back to you being a record reporter, right? Times Herald record reporter, way back when.
Yeah, I got my start in journalism. I grew up in Newburgh. I went to Walk Hill High School, went away to engineering school for a while, came back and finished my studies at SUNY New Paltz, and I worked in local journalism for quite a while. I started at the Walk Hill Valley Times, out of a little garage in the village of Walden. Moved on to work at the Times Herald Record, first in the Monticello Bureau, then actually in the Kingston Bureau, worked a lot of weekends in Middletown.
And that's when they were doing real reporting, local beat writers.
I think when I started in the newsroom had, my recollection is 240-something people in it, and now they're probably down to six or seven. But we were doing a lot of news reporting. We had investigative teams, magazine teams, feature teams. We had an entertainment desk that was one of the best, that you would find anywhere in the country. And that was just a really great experience. And the great thing about working in journalism is if you do it right, it's a great education on how the world works. So you start at a local paper like the Walker Valley Times, you go into zoning boards and planning boards and town boards and village boards. And it's a great education on both how the world works and sometimes how it doesn't work so well. And you ask questions and learn about those things. And then from there, actually went on. I took a one-year stop where I am now, actually. I was vice president of research for a year at Pattern.
Oh.
And then worked for 10 years at the New York City Water Supply System as the director of public and intergovernmental affairs. Did a lot of education program stuff, but really tried to lift the veil of mystery off the reservoir system that supplies drinking water to New York City and to 72 communities north of the city, including several in Orange County, New Windsor, Newburgh, Marlboro, just to the north. Cornwall has an emergency connection to that system. So then was hired about 2 years and 2 months ago to take over the leadership of Pattern.
It's been that long.
And of course, Pattern, we're just about going into our 60th year here in the Hudson Valley, founded back in 1965. And we've been doing research and planning for the region to help the region really understand the essential civic issues that affect the quality of life and economic development and housing and transportation and infrastructure and all the things that sort of make the region hum.
I appreciate you sharing all that because, since I moved to Orange County about 25 years ago, I think Mike DiTullo was at Pattern for Progress then. And I feel like the problem persists that people really have a challenge understanding exactly what you do. And the term that was used back then, and I still hear thrown around, is think tank.
Right.
And people don't really, I don't think they really grasp that very well. What exactly does that mean that you're doing of any substance, right?
Yeah, sure. So what we do is, if you want to go back to the original founding of the organization in 65, when I started here at Pattern 2 years ago, I actually looked up our original articles of incorporation to just see what the heck were we meant to be doing back then, because sometimes understanding what you want to do in the future is contingent upon understanding what you were meant to do in the past. So look that up, and what it was really about back then was there was a lot of change going on in the Hudson Valley, and in many ways it kind of feels similar to the way it is now. So you had urban renewal happening, that was bad.
Sure.
You had sprawl coming up out of New York City. You had the first seeds of the environmental movement being planted. You had innovation happening at places like IBM, leading to a lot of the technologies that we have now in our lives. Those were all causing a lot of sea change in the region. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing that was happening was that the United States Army was getting ready to sell Stewart Airport into private hands. And the region's academic, business, and nonprofit leaders got together and said, hey, we need a nonpartisan, independent, objective organization that would act sort of like a regional planning authority to study and research and do planning for the civic issues that are affecting the Hudson Valley most. And that's how they got together and founded Pattern. And so the first years, a lot of work on infrastructure, a lot of work on transportation. Believe it or not, into the late 70s and early 80s, started working on housing and started putting together plans that led to affordable housing developments in places like Newburgh and Fallsburg and Kingston. And that continues on till today. So,
can I ask you, Adam, who's doing that work at that time?
Yes.
Was there staff there? Was it consultants? How were they doing that early on, the early incarnations of Pattern?
So, for about the first three or four decades of Pattern, Pattern was generally a one or two person shop. Mm. And that one of those two people was generally a planner. The first person who was hired was a planner. And so there was a lot of convening done with county planning departments and others to put together these plans and studies. And the volume of work wasn't huge. Pattern would put out two, three, four things a year. You fast forward to today, we're a staff of six. So we're about three times the size that we traditionally were, and most of our staff are professionally trained planners and policy research experts, mm-hmm. so that we can, you know, sort of look at the issues of the day, the policies that need to be tweaked or made to really drive change in a way that supports quality of life on all these different issues, and dig into that in a way that we can bring them to leaders who have the passion and authority to act on them. So that's really what we do now. And Bill, if you fast forward and you think about what we've been doing lately. Last year, we were fortunate enough to win Housing Nonprofit of the Year in New York State. That goes back to 10 years ago, us starting something called the Center for Housing Solutions at Pattern, and really focusing for the past decade on this challenge of housing, but also working with specifically counties, but sometimes cities and villages, on plans that they could then go execute to put themselves in a better position to allow and encourage the type of housing that their people need to sustain a workforce, right, to sustain youth in their community long term. And I'm happy to say that many of the communities we've done that kind of work for have really done a great job of following those action plans.
They've actualized those plans. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's the biggest fear. And I think that's what the general public, the problem with the concept of a think tank, this, that, and the others, you know, all right, we're just mulling ideas. And I live in the city of Newburgh. I've been there 10 years now. It's the epicenter of studies and plans, and you know, everyone has the solution for it, and they sit on the shelf. So, you know, one of the hallmarks of the work I try and do is pulling some of those from some of those past studies and things. Let's incorporate that. Let's make sure that they don't go to waste. But how do communities you work with, take action based upon plans, so they're not just, you know, words on a page that are really of no consequence.
Yeah, there's really two important steps to that. One is when we put together a piece of research or a plan, it's really important that that plan includes actions. So sometimes you have big actions. You have to break those actions down into tactics. So that's breaking big goals down into bite-sized chunks that people see are achievable. And then the hard part is then assigning those tactics or actions to someone with a deadline to get it done. And, you know, we try to do that in our studies and in the projects that we've done most recently to try to nudge it toward those action items. Because as I said, when I interviewed for this job, as I've said to my team, if we go down the road of doing a study that we think is going to sit on a shelf, then we shouldn't do the damn thing. Mm. I mean, we really should be focused on things that have an action item that can be articulated. that can be brought to people with a reasonable degree of certainty that they will use it, and focus on the studies and the topics that have that at the nucleus of them. A good example would be, we just put out a report in January on 5G, right? The next generation of wireless infrastructure. It is very, very different from the infrastructure that we are used to now that carries our cell phone signal. You know, the antennas on the towers.
It's not just augmenting what's already up there necessarily.
Well, yeah, it's a different kind of infrastructure. And we sent this out to the county planners and the towns and the cities and said, hey, you know, it's working its way north. It's not quite here yet in most of the region, but there's like three or four prep steps that we need to do to get ready for it, or we're going to be caught on our heels. And the installation of this infrastructure, frankly, can look kind of ugly if you're not ready for it. So let's get ready for it. And I've heard back from dozens of people saying, hey, we didn't even know there was any discernible difference from the infrastructure from the past generation to the next generation. That was great to know. And we certainly hadn't thought about how to upgrade our zones and our building permitting procedures and all these sorts of things to account for it. So, you know, they're small. It's a small action, but it's a meaningful one. And we try to keep our eyes out for stuff like that.
The thing I worry about, because it bleeds into all my work, I say it all the time. I'm not a politician. In no way am I. But it's like everything I work with is just dripping in politics. Because, you know, so politics is what I worry about getting in the way of your work.
Yeah.
Does it or is there usually consensus, you know, behind the group that's saying, hey, we want this, and we want to put this, and then by the time you get it and you give it back to them, they're going to just put it in place? Or
so the second article of incorporation from 1965, when we were founded, said that we would carry out our duties as pattern without political aims or affiliations. That was the exact wording that they used. So we, I like to say we don't get involved in that stuff. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, to bring this work to leaders, as I say, with the passion and authority to act on it, you're dealing with people who are elected and appointed leaders in the political world. And so the thing that we really focus on is education. A lot of the things that we study, whether it's housing, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's demographic change, there is an interest that runs common along the spectrum for many of these things. But that interest might be slightly different person to person, right? So we're doing, right now, we're working on a study about the temporary and emergency housing crisis in the region. We see this huge spike in homeless folks, and our department, social services, really struggling to find hotels to house these folks in. Now, for some people, they might be interested in this because they don't like to see homeless people being treated like herd animals, shipped here, there, and all over the place. Their kids bus 2 hours to get to school, you know, these sorts of things.
Sure.
For other people, they might not like this because they might not like to hear that their county's spending $5, $6, $7, $8 million shipping people to hotels all over the place. So there is an interest that runs common here. Some people comes from, you know, the human good angle.
Right.
Some people it comes from the financial angle. But everyone can come at it from some angle to say, we can do better on this thing than we are doing now. Mm-hmm. And I see it as our job to look at those issues from the full circumference so that it appeals to everybody in their own particular way.
That's a great approach. So let's get into more issues. So that, to me, that's just the key. You tackle, you mentioned a bunch of them. When I think of the issues of our day, housing, infrastructure in my work, that's for sure, because there's no economic development without infrastructure.
Yep.
You know, workforce challenges, child care. These are all things that I've seen that you've tackled, you know, frankly. So first of all, what are the genesis of some of these studies that you've done? You're being commissioned to do it. You're deciding as a board or a staff that, hey, this is something we want to tackle, we can actually be a voice in this?
Yeah, so the work that we do on the research and planning end sort of comes in two forms. One is what we call our independent research. So those are ideas that come to us either from our discussions with a wide range of leaders from government, business, academics, nonprofits throughout the region, and we have sort of our ear to the floor to understand what the civic issues are that matter, and we try to pick a few each year to go after and research research and do planning on. And then we have directed research, is where an organization or local government may come to us with a specific project they need help on, and we help them. So, for example, you know, we did the housing action plan for Ulster County, or we just finished a senior citizen needs assessment for Sullivan County. They asked us to come in and do those for them. But, you know, in thinking about the independent research that we do, we really try to pinpoint the civic issues that we know are affecting the region most. So, Bill, if I had to sort of step back and think about, you know, there's great things going on throughout the region. You know, there's great things going on in Warwick. There's great things going on in Middletown. There's great things going on in Poughkeepsie and in Kingston and in Hudson and in Thompson, right?
Right.
But there are some things that get us worried as an organization that looks regionally at some of the trends we're seeing. And it's really sort of three topics that I think, you know, we focus on. And there's three topics where when we look at the regional metrics, we're concerned about the long-term trajectory of the region. One is just straight up demographics, right? We are on a population, we are on a track for population decline and workforce decline, and we are feeling the leading edge of that decline
just
now.
Just the leading edge.
Yeah, just the leading edge. So just a couple stats to sort of bear this out. If you look at the prime working age cohort, so generally people think of that as 25 to 55 or 25 to 65. Let's call it 25 to 65. If you cut that age group in half, 25 to 44, 45 to 64, the older half in our region outnumbers the younger half by almost exactly 100,000 people. What that means is for every person retiring out of the labor pool, you only have a fraction of a person replacing them, right? You add on top of that the fact that for 24 out of the last 25 years, we've had more people move out of the region than into it, and we've lost a total of 135,000 people to what's called outward migration. That's people leaving for the neighboring states, for the Carolinas, for Florida.
A lot of us find it hard to believe because it feels like we're growing and feels like, you know, all these waves of post-COVID and post 9/11 people coming up here, but they recede back and they leave the state altogether.
And at least for the pandemic, what the data showed was, a heck of a lot of people, about 60,000 people moved north out of the city, and most of them landed north of 84. But we lost just the same number of people to the neighboring states, the Carolinas and Florida. And then you add on top of that, that we just pulled these data the other day. From 2010 to 2022, we have almost 30,000 fewer infants, children, and teens living in the region just over the course of 12 years. So what that means is that we are on this long-term trajectory for population and workforce shrinkage. Mm-hmm. And that puts stress on business, not only because there are fewer customers, but there are fewer people to hire. It puts stress on schools. It puts stress on healthcare. It puts stress on a lot of different aspects of our civic society. So that's one. Second one, and these are sort of two strings in the same yarn. They're very closely intertwined, is the housing crisis. Mm-hmm. Now, housing crisis. Everyone's talking about the housing crisis. What the heck is the housing crisis? Yeah. Well, it comes from a bunch of different angles. One is that at some point, we just stopped building housing. So if you look from 2008 until now, we've only built about 0.45 units of housing for every job that we attracted to the region. So there's an imbalance there. Also, the average size of the family is getting smaller. So instead of having 2, 3, and 4 kids, families are now pretty much having 1 and 2. And as if you think of the region as having a population that's flat, okay, so the pie is the same size. Mm-hmm. If the average size of the family gets smaller, you're chopping that pie up into many, many more slices. So as the average size of the family gets smaller, you actually need more housing units to house the same size population. Mm-hmm. So there's all that stress. Then there's the price stress, right? The price stress is when we go around the region and do countywide studies, local studies, what we tend to see is about half the population is spending 30% or more of its gross income on housing. Okay. We looked at, just last year, we did a really interesting thing. We looked at the median price of a home in each of the 9 counties that we study and compared it to the mortgage that the median earning family could afford or could qualify for.
Yeah.
And there was more than $120,000 gap in every county. And in some counties, it was more than $200,000 between the mortgage that the median earning family would qualify for and the price of the median priced home. What that means, Bill, is essentially, if you want to own a home in the Hudson Valley right now, forget about it. There's no pathway to home ownership for the typical family that is our neighbor.
Terrible.
What that means is then they persist in rentals for longer. And you may have seen the story in the New York Times. Our research was cited in it earlier this week or late last week. As those people persist in rentals, that demand and that stress on the rentals pushes up the cost of rent. We lose a lot of rental units to dilapidation and age over time. And so there's all this stress in the housing market that causes more people to leave, right? So I mentioned 135,000 more people have left over the past 25 years. The number one reason they cited when they were surveyed by the Census Bureau was housing, okay? So you have population, you have housing, and then you have this sort of mix of, like, it's like the junk drawer of other stuff that's kind of connected to it, whether it's wages, whether it's childcare. You know, there's a lot of other things that are in the mix there. We've seen a lot of wage stagnation over the recent decades. In fact, some counties we've seen their median wages go down relative to inflation over the past decade or two decades. Childcare, we're getting ready to release a big regional analysis of the childcare system, an interactive study we put together that's the first of its kind, will be coming out next week to try to underscore for folks the degree to which it's harder, especially for working mothers, to participate in the labor force right now because the number of childcare businesses across the region has shrunk significantly. Mm-hmm. So we try to highlight all these things. You know, I'm reminded, Bill, I listened to a radio show on economics. It was several years ago, and there was someone was being interviewed, and they said, it is the worst thing you can ignore is bad news about your health or bad news about your finances. And yet it's human nature that we tend to ignore both.
Right
now for the Hudson Valley, there's a lot of bad news about our sort of regional health and finances in terms of this population shrinkage thing that we're tracking. The thing I worry about is whether we're just sort of have our fingers in our ears going la, 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 because we don't want to see it.
Well, you know, I'm reminded when you were talking about the demography and some of these other issues, I think it was just before your time as CEO, but Pattern put out the, what was it called? It was Out of Alignment.
Out of Alignment, yeah.
Right,
yeah, yeah.
And I remember the displeasure that caused, the backlash from even colleagues of mine in economic development and the, where they, because just they felt it was bad news. And I'm just, I know this is so passe. I'm a facts guy. I want to know what the fact, I know it's so old now, but it's not in fashion. Hopefully it comes back someday like bell bottoms. But, you know, I always say, I'll give you the good and the bad, the ugly. I live in the city of Newburgh. I'm very hopeful. I love Newburgh, yeah. But if someone's going to come there, I'm going to tell them. So I want the facts. So when I received that and read that study, I thought, okay, I mean, I wasn't excited, but I want to know what the facts are. It's the only way you can deal with them. But I do remember a backlash because people don't want to hear the negative.
Well, I would say this. I mean, surprise me with good news all day.
I hope I'm not a shocking
No, 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 no. What I would say is surprise me with good news all day. If you want to come to me every day after work and surprise me with good news, surprise me to your heart's desire. Don't surprise me with bad news.
Right.
I want to see bad news coming long before
exactly.
It hits. And I think what that study tried to do, and what we tried to do last year with a similar, we put out sort of a small version of it that we called the Great People Shortage and its effects on the Hudson Valley, is we're trying to show the region that, hey, see this coming ahead of time, because if all we do is smile and glad hand, I mean, we've got to prepare for the ramifications of this because they are significant. Listen, And a lot of our hospitals now, like a third of the nursing staff is on contract from out of state. There is this massive tension in our regional healthcare system right now between the fact that we are an aging region, so the demand for healthcare is going up, but the workforce to provide it is shrinking. So as the demand for healthcare goes up, the number of people able to provide it is going down, and that creates this tension. And listen, people listening to this will have felt this in their own way in their own lives. I called my doctor to make an appointment for my annual physical. They said they were booking 10 and a half months out. That's a signal of the workforce shortage, right? There's all sorts of ways that this is sneaking into our daily lives, and we can feel it in the goods and services that we want and need. I say this all the time, Bill. When people come out and they oppose housing or they oppose things they don't want, what it really says to me is that we don't understand that in order to have the goods and services that we both want and need, we need to have the people who provide those goods and services. Right. And in order to have the people who provide those goods and services, we need to have the housing across the full spectrum of income that allows those people to live in and around us. Otherwise, some of those goods and services that we want and need are going to become harder to find, farther away, more expensive, and then we'll be really pissed off in a decade or two when we go, hey, why is that thing closing? How come I can't get this anymore? How come I can't go there anymore? We got to see this coming now, or in two decades, we'll be kicking ourselves in the ass for not having seen it.
Absolutely. And I'll put a shameless plug in for our agency, the Orange County IDA. We are actually getting into housing now. We're trying to, even we've had some criticism, which I didn't really expect, as I thought, as you said at the top, we kind of, everyone is on board with the housing crisis. We know it's an issue, but it's actually impeding future economic development. If we can't have people afford to live in this county, first of all, they can't work at the current locations, but it's going to impede us from bringing, you know, a few future attractions, future jobs, the sectors of tomorrow that I want to bring here. But you need the people here as well. So, and they need to be able to live here, and they deserve to be able to live here where they work in Orange, in a place like Orange County. This isn't Bronxville, you know.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, we've had, you know, I won't shout them out here, but we've had some what people would consider signature businesses in the region over the past year or two shut down portions of their business because they didn't have enough employees to keep up part of a factory line or part of a resort hotel, right? And that is a symptom of the leading edge of this workforce shortage. And the data are clear. You know, we don't make this up. The data are clear. This workforce shortage, absent some sort of outside intervention that we're not conceiving now, gets worse by 30 to 50,000 people over the next 10 to 20 years. And that's the floor. It could get worse by more than that, depending on what happens with migration. But, you know, we gotta see this stuff coming, and we gotta care just as much about the ugly underbelly of things as we do about the shiny stuff that we that.
And as you said, we need to get at those issues sooner. We need to know about them sooner. We need to understand them, get our arms around them, and to plan is what you're saying. A plan to address them
for sure.
Well, let me ask you now, as we're kind of winding down on our time here. What are we talked about some negative things, it sounds like, right? Challenges that we're facing in the region. But it's the reality of it.
Yeah.
It's a changing world. It's a changing, you know, our country's changing, our region is changing and such. Where are the opportunities for the Mid-Hudson Valley, for Orange County specifically? What are you hopeful about? Or even if that includes ways that you're addressing some of these in the best possible way in order to maximize our opportunities for the future?
Yeah, I think I'd point out two things. One of the strengths that we often don't seize on to the extent we could is our position relative to water and access to water. As I say, I come working 10 years for the New York City Water Supply. We're fortunate to live in a region that is water rich. And when you look at the leading 20 global climate models that track climate change, our region is going to become wetter, not drier. That's going to create problems, like some of the overland flooding we've seen recently. Make no mistake. That's going to cause problems.
Sure.
But it also puts us to some degree in a competitive disadvantage compared to the places that are going to get drier and they're going to have more persistent and more numerous and persistent droughts. So when it comes to water, that's something we should market, we should think about more often. The other thing that's happening in the region, and including Orange County, is there's this really interesting reinvestment cycle in our downtowns and in our urban centers, whether it's Newburgh or Middletown.
It's one of my favorite things about our work in economic development. It's so wonderful to see revitalization of these cities that were once great, Newburgh being a prime example, and then just completely depressed, and now you're seeing them come back to life.
It's everyone looks to the city, so everyone looks to Port Jervis, Newburgh, Middletown, but you're seeing it in places like Cornwall or like Village of Montgomery, other places as well. And it's interesting to think about what it will take to make sure that that momentum, you know, continues or even gains more steam. And you mentioned infrastructure. That's going to be an important part of it. The other thing that's going to be an important part of it is to continue to think about adaptive reuse.
Sure.
So we have all these old buildings that have really good bones. It's cheaper to build new than it is to adaptively reuse. But when we adaptively reuse some of these buildings, what we do is we put the employment opportunities in the population centers rather than doing what we've done recently, which is a lot of our biggest employment centers are just far enough away from the population centers that it's hard to get there because the public transportation infrastructure isn't like perfect, right?
Sure.
It's good and it's hard to design, but it's not perfect. So to the extent that sort of version 2.0 or version 3.0 of this momentum downtown turns into lots of different thoughts about the adaptive reuse of some of these old industrial buildings or commercial buildings and making sure we're co-locating the jobs and the housing, you know, then I think we can see some real vibrancy in some of these historically really, really great community centers that we have in Orange County and other places throughout the region.
Terrific. No, it's exciting. And I'll relate this to our agency again, the Orange County IDA. All IDAs in New York State have to have what they call a UTEP, Uniform Tax Exemption Policy, that spells out, hey, these are the jobs, the sectors, the kinds of companies we want to attract. Here are the incentives we'll give to this, that, and the other. So it really does, it provides a, you know, almost a score sheet, a matrix, a guide for what we're trying to attract here to the area. And every IDA is required to review it and revise it periodically. We're going through that now because, one, we have a new administration at this organization, of course, and it's a new board, and it's time to recalibrate. What a different time, a different era. We really are in a different era than, say, 10 years ago, and it's just a different world, different outlook, different opportunities, different challenges, things you've all uncovered. So we're actually reviewing it, and adaptive reuse is actually something we identified as one of our key areas that we want to focus on in the future. Huge opportunities in, and certainly I'm someone that is thinking about the urban centers for sure, so that's, you know, one of the motivations, but it's also you're seeing malls in other fields like Camp LaGuardia, you know, other opportunities where we can, something can be reborn rather than, you know, be a blight on the community. So real opportunities across the spectrum, I feel.
I think the next step in this bill is really going to be to modernize our zoning so that the momentum we have and the investments and the incentives are matched by zoning that provides some more freedom and pays attention a little bit more to the way something looks than what it's used for. So, you know, form-based code is a big thing out there right now.
Sure.
And not to bore everyone with the details and become a big nerd fest on zoning, but essentially zoning, old zoning, which is what we have in most of our communities, is what's called Euclidean zoning. So that was really built to keep, you know, different uses far apart from each other. So people lived over here, and then on the other side of town was industrial uses, and on somewhere else in town were commercial uses, but they weren't commingled.
Right.
Well, the modern zoning says, hey, commingle these things. That's fine, because a lot of these industrial processes aren't loud anymore. They're not dirty anymore. Right. They're not polluting anymore. And people want to live in and among where they recreate and where they work. Mm-hmm. And there are some communities, it's still a small number of them in the Hudson Valley, but there are a small number of communities that have transitioned their zoning to focus more on what a building looks like and how high it is and what it's made out of and the aesthetics of it, and caring less about about what it's used for. So as more and more communities come around to that, I think that is going to unleash more interest in developing downtown, because now what you're doing is, instead of giving a developer a crayon or two, you're giving them the whole box, right? And so it allows them to paint the picture they need to paint to, you know, make the capital stack work to finance the thing, have it be relevant to the needs of the community, whether it's residential or otherwise. And I think that's the next sort of thing that we as a region need to focus on to make sure that that momentum picks up even more speed downtown.
Absolutely. That's terrific. Adam, let me ask you, how can people that want to learn about Pattern for Progress, how do they learn more?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean, you can go to our website, pattern-for-progress.org. We're on social media just like everybody is. We're going to be releasing, as I said, a child care study next week. Probably going to make a lot of news. It's really going to help people understand some of these child care hardships that we've been talking about.
I feel like that's something else we got to reinvent. You know,
yeah.
It just needs to be almost like healthcare and reinvented to really work.
Unfortunately, the private child care industry is sort of withering on the vine right now because of forces related to economics and demographics and public policy. And there's a real, I don't want to overuse the word crisis, but it's another one of these stressors in the region that is you know, deleterious to the workforce, but also important for early childhood education. Mm-hmm. So they can find us there.
All your studies, even past studies, they can find on your website?
Yeah, going back to about 2010 is on the website. The older ones are, I don't know, not in a shoebox, but they're somewhere in storage. But going back a ways on there, and we try to post updates regularly to keep people apprised of key data points and key bits of information. This year, Bill, just in January, we put out, as I mentioned, a study on 5G. We took a look at state housing policy compared to the states that surround us. That's a really interesting one.
Interesting.
Got child care coming out. And then on the independent side, across the rest of the year, we have five others coming out. An analysis of this temporary and emergency housing crisis, a adaptive reuse playbook for malls. Every one of our counties has a dead mall or a nearly dead mall.
Right.
And then we have also ones on an analysis of rural transportation, this question between agricultural preservation and the move to install more solar developments. And then the last one, I think something near and dear to a lot of people's hearts, I know in Orange County for sure, this sort of volunteer crisis that's facing EMS, ambulance corps, fire districts, and trying to understand what can be done about that.
Another huge void you'll have there.
Yeah. And again, not to harp on this thing with population shrinkage, but as your population declines, as people move out of the region, as people have fewer children, that also affects your volunteer base.
Sure.
And that's not just for really super important things like EMS and fire. It's for the stuff we like too, like Little League and, you know, Girl Scouts and things like that.
Exactly.
So we're going to take a look at that. Lots of work going on. And our hope when you get down to it, Bill, is that people will take the time to come to our events, to learn about these things, to read them, and then to ask, hey, you know, how can this be applied in the place where I live to make it, you know, a little bit better?
Listen, first of all, thank you for coming on today. I can't thank you enough for the work that you're doing. It's important. I know I kind of joked a little bit about a lot of people not always understanding what Pattern does, but they need to, because it's vital what you're doing. Look at all these issues you're talking about, and you're tackling them. You're not just opining about them. You're doing research. You're really telling us, giving us a real perspective, the clear perspective of what's happening, and then outlining some solutions, really what can be done. And it's valuable. Last thing I want to touch on is you're a membership-based organization.
Yeah.
My wife and I are proud members of Pattern for Progress.
Yep.
Is that part of how you sustain yourself?
Yeah.
And if so, let's talk about how people can be members and why they should be.
Yeah, we've been a nonprofit membership corporation since we were founded. So it is the annual dues paid by our members that allow us to do the independent research side of what we do. People can go to the website, can learn about it. We have about 200 members from across the 9-county region, as I say, businesses, nonprofits, academic institutions, some others, utilities have tended to be members. So if people would like to be members, happy to hear from them. We're easy to find, and it allows us to do the work that we do. So Thanks for asking.
Oh, definitely. No, I appreciate it. So Adam Bosch, CEO, president and CEO.
Oh,
not to be left out. We can't leave that out. I change my title. I just call myself director sometimes. It's
Grand
just easier.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like everyone's a CEO now, right? I mean,
yeah,
everyone.
Yeah.
So you want to be a CEO, you're a CEO. But anyway, you deserve it. You're the president and CEO of Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress. Adam Bosch, Mr. Orange County. He's been here a long time. We appreciate him. Appreciate the work you're doing. And thanks for being on Building the Future. I hope you'd come back sometime. We have so many more things we could talk about.
I hope the audience will demand that.
Exactly. I'm sure they will. I don't doubt it. But thanks so much. Thanks for joining us. And see you soon. All right.
Thanks very much.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a great day. All right. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Building the Future. I'm Bill Fioravanti, your host, CEO of the Orange County Industrial Development Agency. Tune into our next episode soon. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.